Thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show, plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on Monday at 1 p.m, with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m, with new episodes every other week. But for now, enjoy the Happy Hour podcast. Hello and welcome to the Happy Hour.
Yes, it's your mix of music and conversations around sight loss, mental health and well-being.
We have a full show for you today, but first, let's listen to this. Jessie J on RNIB Connect Radio with that great track, Price Tag.
Love her. Welcome to today's Happy Hour.
Yep, once again, it's myself, Holly Chuke, and my friend and co-host, Paulina Kohorov.
And we have a great show for you today, as always, bringing you some amazing tracks and, of course, the latest in well-being and mindfulness. So make sure to keep us company and use this hour to take some much-needed self-care time.
And speaking of self-care, we'll be bringing you February's Sensory Odyssey exercise, which we can all do together later on in the show.
Plus, since it's almost Valentine's Day, Ellie Marsh will be chatting importance of loving yourself with Charlotte Falloon, founder of Northeast Female Empowerment, and Tom Holm from mental health charity Blokes.
And to sweeten things up a little bit, we'll be chatting with blind pastry chef Amun Chawla. So sit tight and enjoy some music. Here's Holly Johnson. We're chatting self-love next.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio and your Happy Hour show. Now, our lovely Ellie Marsh will find out how we can all show ourselves a little bit more love.
Society puts a lot of pressure on single people to find their other half, but no one is only half a person, and being in a relationship doesn't make you whole. Being a single person can be a great place to be, and here to talk to me about empowerment, self-love and mental health is Charlotte Falloon, the founder of Northeast Female Empowerment, and Tom Horn, the founder of Blokes, a mental health charity set up in 2020. Thank you both so much for joining me. So first of all, people are constantly bombarded with messages that, you know, you need to be in a relationship to be happy, which is not the case, as we know. It can really affect the way that people view themselves and can lead to things like low self-esteem, can't it, Tom?
Yeah, definitely. I think for so long, I know it firsthand, I kind of defined my self-worth by kind of either being in or out of a relationship. And like, I was never somebody who like jumped from relationship to relationship. But I always have this kind of feeling of like, what's wrong with me? Like, why can I not find happiness? Why, you know, am I a bad person? You know, is there something people are seeing in me that I don't see in myself? You know, so I think it can leave you with a lot of unanswered questions, and it really can kind of, yeah, it can drive you crazy sometimes.
And it's a lot of external pressure, isn't it? From the media, from perhaps family, friends, you know, parents asking you this, that, and the other. And it's nothing to do with the person that you are, is it? It's just the situation that you're in. There's nothing wrong with it.
No, exactly. I think, you know, you hit on a really key one there. I think social media is painted such a false picture of kind of what the perfect life to lead looks like. And, you know, I think it's only, you know, social media is only half a story, you know, and I think it's not necessarily a true reflection of somebody. It's not necessarily a true reflection of how they're feeling. And like you say, I think there is a lot of pressure, you know, to be in a relationship, to be married by a certain age, to have kids by a certain age, to kind of hit these perceived milestones in life. And I think it's completely wrong, because, you know, what's right for one person isn't necessarily right for another person. I think that's something that people need to bear in mind.
Absolutely. Charlotte, you were nodding along there. You run, obviously, Northeast Female Empowerment, and you speak openly on that page about the fact that what people post on media is the highlights, isn't it, really?
Oh, yeah, 100%. So the page is obviously all about empowering, supporting, and just connecting with local women. And I share, obviously, the highs and the lows of just real life, because I want the page and the community to be a bit of escapism for people. But I don't want it to just look like everything's happiness and rainbows and butterflies all of the time, because it's not.
How do you think we can combat low self-esteem then? Because it's something that runs throughout society. How do you think we can combat low self-esteem in general?
I think it's definitely something for me that has come with age, and definitely since creating the community. I think you've just got to kind of start to like the parts of yourself that you dislike. And then once you've crossed that hurdle, then you'll be able to kind of start loving yourself. It is really hard and it is difficult. And for myself, I have some like challenging days where I don't feel amazing. But once you get there, it's really important.
Tom, you're nodding along there. I mean, everybody has bad days, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think, and Charlotte touched on a really important point there. It's that cliche, you know, that cliche saying of, you know, if you don't love yourself, how can you expect anybody else to love yourself? And, you know, I think the sooner you can come to terms with who you are and what you have rather than who you're not and what you don't have, you know, I think it's only a positive thing. You know, and like you say, you know, everybody's got bits of themselves they don't like, you know. I think, you know, not that I want to keep dwelling on it, but again, social media plays a big part in what the perfect male or female should look like, or what the perfect relationship should look like. And, you know, I think just having, you know, remembering that sense of uniqueness and that sense of, you know, no two people are the same is really important.
And Tom, the bachelor lifestyle, I'll put in quotation marks there, but it's pushed on young men quite a lot, and to be able to, you know, they're supposed to love it and relish in it being a single person, which might be the opposite of how young women are made to feel. But do you think that that adds to the pressure of men when they feel that that's not quite what they want?
Yeah, definitely. I almost think there's this, I think it's all about what it is to be a modern day man. I think it's all about a little bit of toxic masculinity. You know, because I think in a certain sense, you know, men are expected to behave or do things in a certain way. And I think almost, you know, that can stop people living out who they, you know, who they want to be. Like I've never really been somebody who's seen themselves as a lad's lad, or like never really been one to want to lead that kind of like bachelor lifestyle. But I know a lot of people who have, and a lot of people, you know, a lot of guys it suits them and a lot of guys it doesn't. And, you know, I think there's as I said at the start, you know, there's no right or wrong way of living your life. So
absolutely. That's a really important thing, isn't it, about what we were speaking about earlier about the timeline and the time pressures that are put on people. But something that I want to speak about as well is that obviously, Charlotte, you run an amazing sort of support system, really. There's a big community around the page. And when I was doing some research before discussing this topic, there is lots of female empowerment pages and self-love pages for women that are amazing, but there's less so that are targeted at men. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that and why you think that might be.
Possibly just because men maybe don't feel as confident enough to put themselves out there in kind of the way that women do sometimes in regards to like body positivity and things like that. On my page, I post a lot about like women's bodies and how, and stretch marks, and how everyone's got like dimples and scars and everything that's really normal. But sometimes I think that maybe men wouldn't want to post things like that just because of what, like Tom said, what social media has deemed what a man should look like.
Tom, you're nodding along there. Do you think you agree with that?
Yeah, I think naturally and a little bit stereotypically, I think guys can be a lot more reserved in being open to kind of sharing their inner conflict and the kind of their honest thoughts and feelings. Because, you know, I think in my experience from peer to peer, I think historically women are a lot more supportive of each other. You know, it all falls back on those, you know, men not wanting to kind of go through the feelings of guilt, embarrassment, shame. I also think pride plays a big factor as well. You know, every guy wants to be seen as kind of trucking along with life with no struggles, with no worries at all. And I think admitting something like, you know, I'm not happy with the way I look, or I'm not happy with a certain part of my life, you know, I think they kind of see that as a bit of a chink in their armour. And yeah, I just think guys tend to, certainly from my experience, can be more prone to keeping their cards in their chest. You know, and like Charlotte said, I think sometimes guys can be more hesitant to just put themselves out there and kind of, yeah, be a bit different from the people around them.
Do you think that that's something that's been sort of put on them by society? We talked a little bit earlier about toxic masculinity and men being told to, you know, whatever, hide their feelings and things like that. Do you think that that's getting better now?
Yeah, I think it is. I still think we have this whole problem of, you know, man up. I think that's a real kind of problem. It's difficult, actually, because I think there are so many fantastic support groups and support pages and kind of male bespoke mental health services and organisations. But saying it and doing it are two different things. And I think it's so easy to kind of just use your words to encourage men to speak up. But I think actually doing something about it is a completely different thing. So I think it's, you know, I think it's been good to see over the last couple of years, you know, you've got so many male role models that, you know, have kind of openly spoken about their mental health sort of from every walk of life. Like for me personally, like Tyson Fury was a huge one, you know, massive boxing fan. And again, it stems back down to, you know, if somebody who was, you know, the heavyweight champion of the world, you know, 6'7", like 21 stone, has got millions and millions of pounds, and again through social media, look, and you know, he's got a lovely wife, he's got lovely kids, and you think, man, you know, he's got it all, you know. And then you hear, you know, that he's been suffering from depression and sort of anxiety, and you know, tried to take his own life, and it kind of makes you reflect, and I think it kind of makes you understand that you need to take everything you see and everything you perceive about somebody with a pinch of salt, because it's so easy for a smile to hide how somebody's feeling. And that definitely rings true for guys in particular. You know, if somebody said to me, you know, how are you doing, Tom? All I've got to say is, yeah, I'm fine. How about you? And they wouldn't think twice. So I think just kind of being a bit more mindful about not taking everything as you see it, not taking everything at face value.
That's it, isn't it? And depression doesn't, you know, it doesn't discriminate between what you've got and what you haven't. It's a mental health issue and an illness. We are running out of time, unfortunately, but I'm just wondering, we are talking about self-love and self-appreciation, and I'm wondering, from your own personal journeys, if you've got any top tips or advice for somebody who's maybe feeling they want to start out, they want to give themselves a little bit more love and a little bit more appreciation. So we'll go with Charlotte first. What would be your sort of top tips for self-love?
I would say just accepting yourself for who you really are and treating yourself with a lot of kindness and just putting your needs first and focusing on self-care. Like I would take myself a coffee date on my own or walk along the beach if you're local to one with my favorite podcast, and those are my favorite things to do. And I think just spending a lot of time on your own and enjoying your own company helps a lot with self-love as well.
I think you've got to focus on what you do have rather than what you don't have. I think it's so important to kind of be proud of how far you've come and be proud of what you've achieved, you know, because like I say, achievements and things to be proud of are different from person to person. You know, for some people, it can literally just be getting out to start the day. So yeah, I think for me, that'd be the biggest one. And also, and I say it's a lot, but I think everyone just needs to give themselves a break and cut themselves a little bit of slack. Like, you know, stop putting so much false pressure and stop forcing yourself to be something that you're not, or become something that doesn't make you happy. And I think as long as you stick to your moral compass, I think that's the best thing that people can hope for.
Absolutely. Charlotte, where can we find you on social media?
At NE Fempowerment.
Brill. And Tom, where can we find out more about you and about Blokes and all the different work that you're doing?
So I'm on sort of Instagram and Twitter at Tom Home, or just if you search at Blokes on Instagram or Twitter, hopefully you'll come across us.
Perfect. Thank you both very much for joining me.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Ellie. You're listening to The Happy Hour with Holly and Paulina. I don't know about you, Paulina, but I think there's a lot of pressure around dating and finding that significant other. I think when we chat off air, may I add in that, We definitely have similar experiences when it comes to finding a boyfriend, or at least you did before you got married.
Yeah, but see, I didn't really date anyone for a really long time. Like, I think I was in my late 20s when I met my now husband. And for years, I never really had a boyfriend for longer than 2 weeks. That was the longest I managed. And it's a weird one. It definitely feels like a topic of conversation at family gatherings, almost like when you chat about the weather in the lift. It's like, oh, do you have anyone you like right now?
Literally, especially with family, you don't see that often. They think that you must have a boyfriend or a significant other because you haven't seen them in a while.
I don't know. It's a weird one. And I feel like it's hard as well if you're going through maybe a lot at the time, or life is stressful, or you maybe have depression or anything else. If you're not happy in where you are personally, it's really hard to kind of to give this time to someone else. It's absolutely normal to prioritize yourself at that time.
100%. I think that's something I've told myself a lot over the last couple of years, to prioritize myself and make sure that I'm happy within myself and where I want to be before I guess I dedicate that to someone else. So make sure you remember that wise advice, because it's really important. Look after yourself, because you are number one. If you would like to share your experiences of feeling pressured to date, then let us know your experiences. You can email radio@rnib.org.uk. We'd love to hear from you.
We absolutely would love to. Now, we do have more coming on the show, including Andy Shipley, who will introduce this month's Sensory Odyssey exercise. We'll have a special guest join us to introduce today's music therapy moment. And shortly, we're chatting with pastry chef Amun Chen. Paula.
That's coming up after this 2000s track from Leanne Rimes. It's I Need You. Pretty apt for that conversation, right?
I can get by with nothing. With all the blessings life can bring, I've always needed something. But I've got all I want when it comes to loving you.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Now, if you're trying to get healthy and stay away from those delicious sweet treats, then we might be putting your self-restraint to a test. Because today we are talking sweets, we're talking treats and baking with blind pastry chef Amun Chawla. It is so nice to have you here, Amun.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
Oh, me too. I have to say, I have been checking out your Instagram page for the past couple of weeks, and I'm pretty sure it gave me toothache.
I do recommend, if you're coming for afternoon tea, to book a dental appointment afterwards.
Exactly. So how do you make the treats look so good? Because honestly, I feel like your plating is impeccable.
Well, thank you. It's been a real long sort of struggle, you know, losing my sight and getting back to a place where I'm happy with the plating. But really, I've been so lucky throughout my career working in some amazing places that I learned all of my sort of skills before I had my sight issues. And then it was just a case of trying to relearn how to use my skills, but being able to see in a completely different way. So that's sort of how I'm doing it. And every day I'm sort of playing around, putting new things on dishes, changing dishes around, you know, retaking photos until we're absolutely happy with what we've got. Because at the end of the day, we want to make every customer that comes through the door mouth just completely water.
Oh, it absolutely happens. So let's talk about a little bit about your sight loss, because it's something that happened fairly recently, isn't it?
Yeah, so basically I'm a type 1 diabetic. I developed diabetic retinopathy in both of the back of my eyes. And it was around 6 years ago that the signs sort of started happening, the little growths in the back of the eye. And the treatment for that is laser surgery. So I had extensive laser surgery in both of my eyes. And unfortunately, due to the amount of disease that I had in the back of my eyes and the amount of laser surgery that I had, both of my retinas detached. And I had to have 9 surgeries in my left eye at Moorfields Eye Hospital and 2 surgeries in my right eye. So it was quite an ordeal. But yeah, that happened 5 years ago.
So what was going through your head at the time?
You couldn't imagine. I mean, at that time in my life, I was kind of living my best life, if you like. I'd recently just been married, just a year into my relationship with my husband. I was the head pastry chef in a beautiful 4-star hotel in Windsor. I had just received news that I was going to be the new head pastry chef in a 5-star hotel in Windsor. And sort of that week of me joining that hotel was the week that I woke up and I couldn't see. And obviously the weeks leading up to that, there were lots of signs that I had issues with my eyes. You know, I was going through the laser surgery. I was having small bleeds in the back of the eye, which was affecting my vision one eye at a time. It was it was so strange because it'd be like I'd look up from looking down at the desk and it would be like a lightning bolt through the eye. And I'd be like, why can I see that? Like nobody else can see it. And it was in the back of my eye. It was like one of the vessels had just popped. And then sort of throughout the day, your vision becomes blurrier as the blood disperses, and your mind just doesn't really know at that time how to cope with it all. And I was very much, well, it's going to be fine. I'm having the laser surgery. I'm going to go to work. Everything's going to be perfect. Didn't quite work out that way.
Oh dear. So what made you, obviously that was quite a hard time, but what made you pick yourself back up again? Because, I mean, you had all the surgeries, but you're still registered visually sight impaired.
Yes, that's absolutely true. So in my left eye, I basically have between 2% and 5% vision. And in my right eye, it's probably 50% vision. Also, both of my eyes now, they don't both look in the same direction. So I have double vision as well. So if you imagine in the right eye, I can see enough to see in front of me. But if I'm looking at the TV or if I'm trying to look at someone's face, it's a complete blur. Also, then for trying to read stuff or read signs, you know, even slightly in the distance, it's not going to happen because the eye just isn't good enough. And in the left eye, although I don't see much out of it at all, when it's really bright, the double vision is super noticeable. So, you know, I'll see two of everything. So, and now that I'm talking about it, I'm looking around my room. I see 2 TVs. I see 2 glasses on the table because, just, you know, your brain is sort of picking up on the fact that you can see 2 of everything. But yeah, it's something that every day is a challenge. But it's something that every day we sort of, you know, work through to keep motivated and just to keep going, really.
And I think you also managed to get a new job after all of everything that you went through at the time as well.
Yeah, so I spent a whole year sitting at home, not being able to see anything. I was completely blind. After having all my surgeries, there was oil in one eye, there was gas in the other eye, and there was a lot of changes happening. And as soon as I had my second surgery in my right eye and the vision was coming back to a point that I could make a cup of tea for myself, I could get myself ready in the morning without anyone helping me, the first thing that was on my mind was right, I've got 2 options. I can either sit at home and not do anything and be in a depressed state of mind, or I can really, as much as it's going to be difficult, as hard as it's going to be, try and get out there, try and get a job, try and do something just to keep me going, really. And at that time we were lucky, we got our flat provided by the council. I've got a small front garden, a small back garden, and I said, right, what I want to do, I want to fill it with plants. I can't see great, but I want to be able to see colour. And we were going every day to the garden centre, picking up new stuff. And my husband said, oh, they're looking for a chef. And I had to think about it for ages. I was like, is this something that I'm going to be able to do again? Am I going to be able to hold my knife and use my other hand and chop something? Am I going to be able to stand over a naked flame and cook something? And after weeks of sort of thinking about it and the job still being available, I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. Push yourself and see what happens. And that was the start of my journey. And I spent 2 years working in the garden centre, and I pushed myself every day. Day one, walked through the kitchen. I was super confident. I was like, yes, I can do this. You know, pots, pans, this is my life. This is what I know. The first check came through the machine. I couldn't read the check.
Oh, no.
I was like, oh, no. First obstacle, I can't read what the customer wants. And that was my first challenge. And I thought, right, perfect. This is what I needed to see. This is how my progression was going to progress, because I didn't know that I couldn't read the checks. And the way around it at the time was change the ink in the printer and ask somebody to help me read the check. And I'm waiting to see if the customer's going to complain, because, you know, it's the first dish I've cooked since losing my sight. There was no complaint. The next dish went out, no complaint. The next dish, no complaint. And sort of over the 2 years, I sort of built my confidence up and just retuned my skills into how to use my hand-eye coordination and just my being around me, you know, like where things are, how close to stand next to something, how people had to walk around me. There were so many things that we went through, and it helped me greatly, you know, to get back on my feet.
So where are you at right now? How do you feel about your life and where you are career-wise?
At the moment, naturally, every day it is a struggle. I don't want to lie to anyone, you know, if you're visually impaired, just walking down the street can be difficult. But how I feel now, I feel I'm in a really good place. I'm now working in a 5-star luxury hotel in High Street, Kensington. I'm the head pastry chef there, which is a great achievement for, firstly, someone of my age, and secondly, with someone of my disability. And I'm in a good place, I think. I'm super happy. We're designing new afternoon teas. So we've got, at the moment, we do a London landmark theme, and we're looking to change that shortly. We've got the Valentine's Day afternoon tea coming up. We've got to do something for Easter, Mother's Day, Chelsea Flower Show. The Queen's Jubilee. So there's all of these sort of things going on at the moment. And I just think I'm so lucky that I managed to get back to this place, you know.
You seem to have so much creativity in you, and you make so many amazing different treats, and they all look beautiful. But if we went to you right now, right this moment, what would be the one thing you would be insisting that we need to try that you make?
Oh, 100%. You need to come for afternoon tea. It is by far our best seller, and you need to eat my scones. My scones are the best.
So putting the bar really high up there, aren't you?
I'm putting the bar high. They're not. So I call them country scones, because in London you have a very sort of scones come very perfect, very neat, just with colour on the top, no sort of crack around the side. For me, that's not a scone. A scone for me is a beautiful, soft in the middle, crunch in the outside, with some colour, a crack around the edge. Yeah, a country scone. I mean, my scones are beautiful.
Oh, it just makes my mouth water just hearing about it. So one final question. It's a controversial one. What do we put on a scone, and what order?
Oh, wow. I knew that was going to be your question. So I had this debate on my Instagram just the other day. So guys, first of all, it's a scone, not a scone. Let's start with that. Secondly, always clotted cream first and then jam. I know that that's going to cause so much drama in the world of scones, because half the people want to put jam first, half the people clotted cream first. But how I look at it is like a sandwich. You always put the butter before you put the jam.
I completely agree. So if you disagree with us, feel free to drop us a line. It's radio@rnab.org.uk. Amun, before we let you go, what's your Instagram page?
So my Instagram page is Amun Chawla, AmunChawla. And it's all the sort of dishes that I'm doing at the moment, all the patisseries, all the afternoon teas. I think the last post I put up was of cream tea. So you will see the perfect scone with the clotted cream and the jam.
And you can comment there and let Amun know that he's wrong.
Exactly. Please do. And please do follow me, you know, for inspiration, and send me a message if anyone has any sort of recipe queries or, you know, wants to know how we do something. And yeah, come down to the hotel and see us sometime. It'd be lovely.
Brilliant. Amun Chawla, thank you for sharing your passion on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Stuck on you. Got this feeling down deep in my soul that I just can't lose. Guess I'm on my way. Needing a friend. And the way I feel now, I guess I'll be with you.
Lionel Richie on RNIB Connect Radio. You're listening to the Happy Hour, and just before Lionel there, we had a bit of a debate, and it was about scones with pastry chef Amun. So Holly, I really want to know this. What is your stance? Is it jam or cream first? Which one?
Now, we always talk about food off air, and now it's come to on air. I don't know if that's worrying. But anyway, I would say cream first.
That's good. I'm glad we're not going to fall out, because I was completely ready to drop the show, leave it, find someone new, move on with my life.
Right. If I get axed from the show, the reason is because we don't have the same scone preference.
Apparently. But, you know, for now it's fine. It's cream. I agree. Cream first, jam next. You don't want your jam sliding off the cream.
No, it's just wrong in so many ways.
Actually, you don't want your cream sliding off your jam.
Right, it's been a long day already.
Yeah, let's move on. What's coming up next, Holly?
Next up, we're going to take a breather with some air awareness.
Andy Shipley here, and welcome to February's guided exercise from my sensory odyssey. Air. It makes the land roar and eagles soar. Without it, we'd be dead in seconds, but seldom give it a single thought. So it's time for some air awareness. Once you've found your spot, close your eyes and allow your weight to drift down towards the ground, feeling the pull of gravity. Let your attention also drift down, passing through your legs, through your ankles, and emerging through your feet as imaginary roots, penetrating the earth and interlocking with the network of roots and fungal threads that are interlaced just beneath the earth's surface. Notice the sense of connection you feel. Held in place by the land and the wide round earth.
Become aware of how the air is moving around and through you. The sound of the wind blowing through the trees or nearby structures. The sensation of any breeze on your skin. The flow of air as it passes in and out of your body with every breath you take, keeping you alive from moment to moment. Now bring your attention back to your roots, connecting you to the earth. In your own time, gradually disentangle them from the roots and fungal threads and withdraw them back into your feet. When you're ready, slowly open your eyes.
You can find my full 14-day sensory immersion on my website, which is www.natural-inclusion.org. And if you want a deeper air immersion, join me for half an hour or so on the 24th of February at 7:30. If you want to get in touch, just email me at andy@natural-inclusion.org. So until the next time, stay sensational.
That is it for today's happy hour as well. Thank you for keeping Holly and I company today.
It's been fantastic as always. Remember, if you want to listen to any of the interviews again, you can find all of our previous episodes on the Happy Hour podcast. Just search for RNIB Happy Hour podcast.
Now it's of course time to end the show with this week's music therapy moment.
And we have a special guest with us this week, sharing a track that means a lot to him today. It's the one and only David Hogg from A Little Alternative.
I'm really looking forward to this one. And if you want to hear the latest in pop, folk, rock and indie music, make sure to tune in to David's A Little Alternative, Fridays 9 p.m. and Saturdays 7 p.m. here on RNIB Connect Radio.
And if you'd like to share a track that is important to you, or maybe it just makes you happy, then get in touch.
Please do email us. It's radio@rnab.org.uk.
But for now, that's it for the happy hour. Hang tight for David's music therapy moment. And Paulina and I will see you on the next episode. Bye.
Bye.
Hi there, I'm David Hogg, and a song that means an awful lot to me is a song called Ghosts by the band Mayday Parade from their 2013 album Monsters in the Closet. This was the first kind of bit of my music that I got very, very excited about. And it was a lead-off single from that album. And it was the first album that I got properly excited about that helped cement my love for alternative music over, what, going on a decade now. And when I saw them live in what was my first ever gig, this was the first song that they played. So a lot of very happy memories attached to this song. And here it is. Here's Ghosts by Mayday Parade.
There's a ghost in my bedroom. It haunts me at night.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips, and our chat, just catch the full show, plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. And we have new episodes every other week. But for now, I hope you enjoyed the Happy Hour podcast and we'll see you on the next episode.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.